I'm Angela Park. I am the founder and executive director of a nonprofit called Diversity Matters. Our tagline is changing the culture of change. So the roots of the modern environmental movement are certainly grounded in the history of conservation in the United States. When you think back to the late 19th century, so much of conservation was framed by notions of wilderness, of pristine lands, of untouched places. And in many ways, the connection of people to those places was really about keeping people out. A lot of the folks who did that phenomenal work, they brought with them the zeitgeist of their time. The writing about Theodore Roosevelt and John Muir and some of the racist notions that they had, their views of Indians, not to mention other groups of people, they were grounded in what many people considered to be the norm. Theodore Roosevelt, for example, was very complicated. He had extremely virulent racist notions, and yet he supported Indian rights in many of his official capacities. When you think about the people who started a lot of the modern environmental organizations, there's very much continuity when you think about early days of conservation. If you look at the membership, so if you think about the donors, the most vigorous supporters and volunteers, they're primarily upper middle class, suburban, very well educated. And obviously, this constituency is overwhelmingly white. And so in many ways, we mirror in the early 21st century what conservation looked like in the late 19th century. It makes perfect sense that when you found an organization, you create a culture that works for you. You don't create a culture for the people who haven't shown up yet. The modern environmental organizations, they were the Davids fighting Goliaths, and their efforts were really overwhelmingly shaped by a need to try to focus on regulation, on policy, on legislation, and therefore that privileges certain kinds of thinking, law, science, lobbying. And so when you think about the demographics of the folks who have been involved in that founding work, it carries on today. And if you think about how race and racism play out right now in the modern environmental field, it's very rarely a matter of male intent. It's not overt as, you know, putting nooses on people's desks. It certainly is nowhere close to that. But systemically, we definitely have some structural issues where there's a reinforcing loop, a vicious cycle. And it starts with how we frame environmental issues right now and how environmental organizations brand their work. And a lot of the way we frame issues, for example, climate change, are very scientific, they're very remote, so it's 350 parts per million, it's about polar bears that are way, you know, far away from where we live. It's certainly not about the immediate places that we know. And how we frame our issues, it attracts a subset of the U.S. population. Now, the subset of the population that we're attracting are incredibly eager, but it's certainly not attracting a broad group because of how we frame our issues. At the same time, there are a high number of barriers. A lot of this work requires an unpaid internship as your first step into the door. That certainly has a class and to some degree a race cut. It's also true that to work in the environmental field, you have to be very strongly connected to some networks. A lot of organizations do not have very strong recruitment and hiring protocols. A lot of times the protocols don't even exist or they're very loose, and it kind of is, you know, you can hire whomever you like. And then there are certainly the casual, commonplace examples of racial bias when it comes to the assumptions that are made, you know, that people of color either don't care about the environment, that all people of color are poor and too busy with day-to-day issues to think about these bigger picture, longer-term issues. What people experience when they come into a lot of these organizations, many people who are the pioneers, they have the experience of being the only. And when you run after diversity for diversity's sake, you run the risk of tokenizing people, asking people to speak on behalf of their race, their entire community, in a way that obviously no white person's ever asked. For many senior leaders who are people of color, one of the things that makes it hard to do this work and to work in the environmental field is that not only do you have to do your very, you know, difficult, challenging job, which you may love, you also have to be in charge of all sorts of diversity initiatives. And you have to do two jobs. I've certainly been in many situations and have talked with many colleagues in organizations where there are lots of what people call micro inequities. An African-American environmental professional being at a conference, standing outside, talking to other colleagues and being assumed as being the bus driver who's going to be taking people to the airport. Colleagues who are in offices, but people assume that they are there to be an administrative role when they're actually a scientist running the meeting. These are the kinds of things that happen with, you know, no ill intent, but it's cumulative. So I think the first thing environmental organizations that want to take the work of being more diverse and thinking about creating more inclusive organizations internally, the first thing they need to do is stop thinking about these as initiatives. This is ongoing, forever work. And I think one important place to start is to really connect why that work matters to succeeding in their mission. A lot of times organizations do this work because they think it's the right thing to do, but they haven't really gotten clear about what's the most compelling rationale for how this is going to make them successful. If you can't connect it to mission, it's really hard to sustain this work. There's a really long history in many other institutions, and they're primarily in the private sector. Organizations that are very clear about what the business case is, why this matters to their long-term success, and it's about having a multi-year forever strategy that takes these pieces on bit by bit. I think what's at stake if the environmental field doesn't figure out how to engage broader constituencies, simply we're going to lose on the issues that we care so much about and that we work so hard for. And on some issues like climate change, we don't have a lot of time. If we're unwilling to make ourselves uncomfortable because we don't want to confront the things that we're not so good at, we're simply not going to win on our issues. There's nothing more fundamental than your ability to drink clean water, to breathe clean air, to have access to healthy food. And yet the fundamentals of what we call the environment have become something that people don't consider to be primary. We've got to figure out how to make these connections to people's day-to-day lives. And not addressing the fundamental disparities in environmental protection, the fact that the people who are most impacted by climate change, by dirty air, by unclean water, by the least access to nature, who benefit the least from a clean environment, succeeding in the big picture, but finding that what we're leaving behind is a world in which these disparities are exacerbated, in my mind, that's not what it means to win.